ganun.
Welcome to the Dauntless Grace Exchange. I'm Megan.
And I'm Deidre. And we are back now, full on January. No New Year stuff. Like, we are in it. Everybody is in freezing cold weather. And we're waking up to dark mornings. And we are running our kids to school and just doing the things.
But it's a good week. Because it's my birthday week.
Well, that's true. This is going to drop right before your birthday. So that's good.
I know. And it's also kind of depressing because last year at this time we were on a cruise in the Caribbean. So all of my photo memories are like, look, last year on this day, you were in Turks and Caicos. And today you are in weather that has 0 degrees and you have to drive your kids on the snowy roads to school. So slightly depressing, but it is my birthday week still.
If I were an acting coach, I would talk to you about what just happened with your voice. Cause you were like, but it's a good week. And also, this really bad stuff.
And wait, what happened with my voice?
You were so really excited while you were talking about all the bad things.
That tracks.
It's such a good week. And also, it's a terrible week.
Sorry. It's such a good week. And also, it's really depressing.
There you go. I'm just making fun of my voice, really. I'm getting over something. So it's a little, it might have some modulation problems here in this episode where nothing comes out or it comes out too strongly or too high pitched or too low. We don't know. It's a little bit of a surprise every time I open my mouth.
We don't know.
It's another fun thing about this time of year. We all just give each other our colds.
Oh my gosh. I am still coughing after 6 weeks of it, maybe. I'm not sure. It's a whole thing.
This is why I'm kind of depressed about that. It's a really long time to be coughing.
I mean, I feel great. I'm so sorry.
Well, welcome to our new year, new you episode. Just kidding.
False.
That's not what we do here. It's not what we do.
No. New year, same me.
But listen, we did do something fun, sort of a pre-birthday thing this last weekend. You want to tell our listeners?
Well, if I say it, then I feel like I'm going to get made fun of. But for my birthday-ish, well, I have to call it a birthday present because you actually bought me the ticket. So yeah. You were like, hey, we should do this for your birthday. So instead of going on a cruise, us cruise chicks went to a venue in St. Louis to dance with hundreds of other Swifties for a Taylor Swift party. I think that's just what it's called, a Taylor Swift party. It was a DJ spinning just Taylor tracks with Taylor videos behind them and just people in every era outfit dancing and singing to Taylor. And it was pretty epic.
And for those who don't follow you on Facebook, tell the listeners what you had on your legs for this and which era you were for.
Well, okay, you could really just put any outfit on in the whole world and probably figure out that you're one of Taylor's eras because she's got 10 different eras. She's got, I mean, she covers everything from country to pop to synth to R&B to folk to alternative to indie. Like, she has all the genres. So yeah. I decided I wanted something that was going to be very explicitly a Taylor genre. So I went for the Reputation era. And if you don't know Reputation, it is black. It is snakes. It is apparently fishnets in 0 degree weather. And I went Reputation full on snakes and black everything.
No, like snakes pattern, snakes on your fishnet tights, which was,
yes,
was so funny. And your legs were frozen. We were running out of there, yes, after midnight and it was like -6 degrees outside and we had to go several blocks to our car. It was hilarious.
I just want to point out how proud I am of us because we are a bunch of 40 something women and we made it at a party that started at 9 p.m., which is, let's be honest, past my bedtime, didn't end till 12, sang and danced for 3 solid hours without skipping a beat, at least you and I did, and still managed to get home. And okay, I slept really, really long into the morning, but I made it through the night and I was a little worried about it without extra caffeine.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It was a late night for all of us Midwesterners who eat dinner at 4:30 or 5.
Okay, that was a total slam.
It was fun. So yeah, we went, saw the Taylor Swift thing, and one of my favorite songs, like the Taylor version that was 10 minutes long, is oh my goodness, I just forgot it. What's the one where she's telling the story about her first heartbreak?
All Too Well, 10-minute
Well,
version.
All Too Well.
But I
Yes.
do want to point out it wasn't her first heartbreak. Like, she had already gone through stuff with like John Mayer and stuff, but this was about Jake Gyllenhaal, which happened when she was about 21.
Okay, not the first one, right? So Dear John was really the first big heartbreak with John
I
Mayer.
think that was one of her biggest songs about it. Yeah, although she has some angsty high school songs too.
Yeah. Okay. All Too Well, though. I don't know. There's just something about that long extended version of this new Taylor album. Ah, I love it. Love it. That's
She's
one
such a
where
good storyteller. Yeah, it's amazing.
she probably has other better songs, but there's just something about that one that speaks to me.
I have actually looked at rankings of all of her songs, and she's got like well over 200 that she's written. And any ranking I've ever seen has that song easily in the top five, if not the number one song.
Really?
It's just that good of a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she says something in it, this line that I was very interested in, because I just had a conversation with my daughter where she says, "For the hope of it all."
That's a different song, but yes, it's a great line. It's in the song August.
Oh, bummer. Okay. It was late. I bet they played 70, 80 songs that night. There was a lot of songs.
Was so many songs and it was so fun. But yeah, the song August, it talks about August slipped away into a moment in time. And that's where she said to live for the hope of it all.
Yes, that's right. Okay, well, it really stood out to me because I just had this conversation with my daughter Hope, who's in acting classes right now. She's finishing up her theater degree, and she was telling me one day how cool it is to learn about this phrase for the hope of it all. And so, as actors, when you're in something, especially something you know is going to end badly for your character, for example, and it could be like the whole place knows it. I mean, if you do Romeo and Juliet, the people know the story, right? But even if the audience doesn't know that maybe you're gonna die or this relationship isn't gonna work out right, that as an actor, you have to live for the hope of it all, because otherwise you're just playing like a caricature of this part, because you're not really striving to solve the problem or to overcome the conflict or to live. I mean, like, think about if your life is gonna be over. If you're playing that from a point of defeat, like, you already know this is the end of the story, you just become so one-dimensional, and people don't relate to that, because what we relate to is the struggle and the against all odds, like, perseverance that comes up in us. And so when I heard her telling, and that is a story as well, it's more of a fictionalized story that Taylor wrote, right? But for the hope of it all, like, even when I saw, especially that story, she might have been saying something like, even when I saw that this didn't have a future, I still, for the hope of it all, had to live fully in these moments, you know? And I don't know if she meant it like that, but I loved that phrase, especially since I just had that conversation. And it just made me think, like, this is where we're at in January, like, middle of the month, already messing up some New Year's resolutions, already, you know, had cars die and been sick and disappointments. It's not like last year, whatever. But we don't give up. The struggle is, for the hope of it all, things can be different. Things can change.
I just had a conversation with somebody, I guess it was last week, where I was just telling them about Enneagram fours because I'm a four and so is she. And I was just saying that fours have this tendency to really get stuck in a feeling. And when they are feeling a feeling, they feel like they've always felt that feeling and they're always going to feel that feeling and there's never going to be another feeling. And I'd say for the most part, until I started doing parts work with myself, that was really true in my life. But I will say that throughout all of those feelings, even when it was angst or sadness or overwhelm, there always was that little glimmer of for the hope of it all. And the only time in my life I can remember where that hope felt like it was extinguished actually felt like a night. It's a weird story, but it was probably 8 or 9 years ago. And I was in bed one night, and like, I don't know if it was like an attack of the enemy. I don't know if it was my own soul trying to tell me something. I don't know. You can put whatever words to it you want. Maybe it was a nightmare, but I remember waking up in the middle of the night. I think I must have been home alone for some reason. And just feeling like there was no hope. There was nothing. And it is the first time in my life that I have felt depression set on me in such a fierce way that I was like, oh, I understand. I understand why people feel like there's no way out. I understand this now. And it gave me like this glimpse of empathy because it felt like all the hope had been extinguished. And it didn't last long, maybe 3 minutes, you know, at best. So that's why I felt like maybe it really was just something I needed to fight through that night to give me that glimpse of that for other people. But I think that is the beauty of what that lyric is. When we have even just the tiniest little flame of hope, there's something to live for, to live for the hope of it all, to live for something that's going to keep us going no matter what the emotion or the circumstance like you were talking about is.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just shared that. It felt really weird, but I just remember feeling like, oh, that's what it feels like when it's taken away.
That little light that gets extinguished. Yeah. I was listening to it's not new, it came out after the pandemic, but it's been out for a year or two now. But Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart, where I'm going through that series with some people, and we were watching the video today on where we go in the place of our heart when things are overwhelming or unknown. I think it's unknown, something like that. But some of the emotions in there, everything from anxiety to dread to stress and overwhelm, vulnerability is in there. And she makes some different distinctions about specifically anxiety, like how that plays, how we all experience anxiety, which is different than being an anxious person, which is also different than having clinically diagnosed anxiety, right? So there's, she kind of tries to separate the clinical anxious disorder from being a person with anxiety versus some of us or all of us at one point or another feeling the emotion of anxiety. So I thought that that was a good point. But she talks a lot about how anxiety, worry, and dread are all of these emotions that we, again, anxiety, like as in a similar to worry, but like not clinical anxiety. Okay. But these are things that we, when we worry about something, it's in the future. When we're dreading something, even when we know we have to do it, it's in the future, which is very different than fear, which is one of the shortest lived emotions. And what we put ourselves through, the torture we put ourselves through to live with worry and dread and all of this, compared to the actual fear that comes in the event when it's present. And I thought that was kind of an interesting point because we take away the hope of something when we're living in that state. Instead of being fully alive and in the moment, fear will tell us how to respond in a way that keeps us safe, you know, and we're reacting like in the moment to that. This isn't where I was going to go with that. But she also talks about vulnerability.
Wait, question though, before you get there, was she the one, or did we hear it somewhere else that was that taught us if you're living out a worry ahead of time, it's having the exact same physical reaction in your body and even in the ruts in your mind and stuff as if you were in the moment itself. So like the worry or the anticipatory worry about an event was wreaking the same havoc on your body as it would as if you were in the event itself. Was that her or
I
something
don't
else?
think that was her. I think that might have been the trauma thing, the or Hilary
Oh,
Bryan. Either
yeah, it
that or
might
the
have. There's,
stress cycle.
I don't remember
I
who
could
taught
be.
us that, but it was a book or a podcast or something that we listened to. But I haven't like forgotten about that because when I really want to start panicking about something in the future like that, like you're saying, not only is it stealing from the present moment, but it's actually already doing the things to my nervous system, to my body, to my brain that would happen if the actual fearful event were happening at that moment. So it's
Yeah.
like it's happening twice.
And almost worse because your body isn't responding to it in a, because you can't respond to it to do something with that information. So you're not allowing your body to cycle through the stress cycle then. Like if you really w did have to run through your life or make a decision quickly to act or something, you'd at least be allowing that stress cycle to finish for what fear gives you. I think with worry, it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it's why it leaves you kind of really sick almost from it, you know?
Maybe that's why God tells us not to worry in the New Testament. It's not like, oh, ye of little faith, don't worry. Maybe it's like, hey, you're damaging yourself when this happens.
Yeah.
Maybe it's
Yeah.
more about a protection for us than a chastisement.
Well, and she says there's little data to prove that because people say if I don't worry, then I won't be pre prepared. And she says there's actually little data to prove that it actually helps you in the future. Like preparing for worst case scenarios isn't actually helpful, which is really sad for our Enneagram sixes to hear, because there is the opposite side, which is really productively preparing, which is different than worry, I think. And there is a lot of, and people think, well, I can't change it. She said there's actually a lot of data to say that you can change that, which I thought was interesting. Like fear is a hardwired response that we can't change. It's going to come up and we're going to have to deal with it, right? But I guess worry is more of a decision to think on future events, and it's less biologically wired in us. So it's
I think that
interesting.
makes sense.
Yeah. She did say something about the physiology of excitement and nervousness. That's where she was talking, like those present in your body the same way. And so it's important to name that. And am I nervous because I really am worried that something will happen, or am I nervous, excited, and that nerve-sightedness, you know, that we say, like, how do you decipher those two?
My kids always say that they're nervous-sighted about something. I think ever because like ever since Jory was little, because they used that word on a My Little Pony episode. So
Oh.
ever since she was like 3 or 4, they've just always said the word nervous-sighted. I'm nervous-sighted.
Like I in my body, I'm feeling the same as I would, you know, like anxiety almost.
Yeah.
Everything's shaking. I'm very nervous, but it
But I
really
want to do the thing.
I
Yeah.
want to do the thing. Yeah. Anyway, getting back to the hope of it all, one of the things she says, though, vulnerability is one of the emotions that is in this part of the heart where we go when things are too much, I think is what it is, which is so interesting to me. Like we have a choice to stay open in the moment. And the risk and the courage that that takes is really interesting. But she said when we shut that part off, we don't have the hope that things can be different. So think about how different dread and worry are and the result they give us versus the risk that vulnerability gives us. And we can move into vulnerability with fear present, right? Like the fear can come and say, this isn't safe, but I'm going to choose to stay open anyway. And that's really scary because someone could totally drop our heart there, or we could be rewarded with connection. And I just thought it was really interesting. What does it look like then? So as she was talking about that vulnerability, she was talking about the hero's journey. And so the backstory of act of the three acts of the big hero's journey, you know, the backstory is act one. Right at the end of the backstory is where we have the inciting moment. And I thought this is so interesting because this is where you and I started with the conference material before we even knew Enneagram, definitely before we knew IFS. But the inciting moment is this invitation into a journey, right? But then the hero, traditionally, the protagonist, rejects vulnerability through the whole second act. How can they get themselves out of this mess without changing, without the vulnerability or whatever? But if it's a good journey, by the end of act two, they've embraced vulnerability and it gives the meaning or the wisdom to take back. So, you know, like if they're in the journey going out, like they finally have something to bring back, a tale of hope and redemption. You know, if we think about like in recovery, like I can come back and tell you how I finally battled my addictions or whatever, because I had to be vulnerable and share it with somebody or walk through the healing process, or I don't know, there's so many examples of it, but I thought that was really interesting that where we suffer the most in act two is our resistance to vulnerability. And I'm like, that's when we lose the hope of it because we give up that we can have a different ending. And then we get stuck in these emotions like dread and worry, where there's no spark of light that something can change and that there's some kind of redemption. I don't know, it just made me really like start kind of popping inside myself, like, this is really important that because we all have an inciting moment that is an invitation to vulnerability. And if we don't respond to that invitation, we get so disillusioned by life and by the journey.
Well, that's literally, yeah, what Dauntless Grace is, was are you going to take that invitation to try to cycle, like stop cycling through what's always been, or move into something that's going to be feel dauntless? Wait, feel scary, so you need a dauntless grace. I got the words. To kind of move into the next thing. But that's fascinating. I also love how my hero, Taylor Swift, led into your hero, Brené Brown, for this really seamless conversation that we're having right now. And I feel like that couldn't have been orchestrated any better.
I love that. It's like the perfect little full circle moment there.
I mean, I think Taylor's kind of a genius and a poet, and obviously Brené is a genius and analytical mind and researcher who has figured out these softer emotions that probably to an analyst and a researcher weren't supernatural for her.
Right.
I mean, she's talked pretty openly about being an Enneagram one and what that like striving for perfection looks like and what it looks like to break down and be vulnerable instead and how that brings that connection. And Taylor's been really open about being an Enneagram 3 and how it looks like she has to wear a different mask and put on all these different versions of herself, which is why she has so many eras.
Yeah.
But that at the end of it, she's who she is. And if people don't like her, like she has her people. And so she's found the hope thread through that. And she's had some really tough failures on the journey to get that.
Yeah. I think that anybody who is worth listening to probably has experienced some failure to get to the point where they can embrace vulnerability. That our egos are so hardwired to not allow for that it's some, especially it for some Enneagram types, maybe especially, it takes a lot to hit that point. The ladies I was doing that Atlas of the Heart with, they were using examples like hitting rock bottom is when you finally are willing to look at, the addiction or the abusive cycles or the toxic relationships. Like, we don't just get there because we wake up one day with this epiphany that we want to be different. There, because the change is painful. So we have to want the change more than we want the pain, or, risk it, because
Like
it
cho
won't.
choose your hard, right?
Yeah.
Which I actually hate that phrase because I think it's misused and thrown around a lot. As out of a place of privilege. But in this case, it really is. Like, are you going, it, because it's about things under your control. It's about your own parts and responses and embracing that vulnerability for connection and change.
Yeah. I didn't see this going here exactly after Taylor Swift, but
Think that's the beauty of Taylor Swift.
I'm so bummed that I had the phrase in the wrong song, though.
No, I think they're both songs worth talking about,
Okay.
100%. August is on the Folklore album, so if people are looking for that phrase, the hope of it all, but All Too Well 10-minute version is definitely worth listening to, and that's on Red, Taylor's version.
Taylor's version. Thank you very much. Somewhere in the middle of just, I don't know, like I said at the beginning, life's disappointments of, it's just January, middle of January. The holidays are over. All the same
Gone
stuff.
on a cruise.
I'm not on a cruise. The weather stinks. But there's these little moments that, and I think that's why we did our Eucharisteo list so well last year. We were determined to find those little glimmers of hope, find those little gifts that were in the day, even when it was a rough day, even when we were getting bad news, even when depression was present, even when anxiety was present, even when there was relational conflict. Like, there's still these moments of that give us the hope to press into something new, something different, or to just find Thanksgiving for what we already do have. And I guess I want to be careful to not say, like, the new thing is the shiny thing. I don't mean that,
Right.
right? It's like you said, it's breaking the cycle that's kept us stuck in patterns that aren't helpful to us anymore. And so I think the new thing is the breakthrough into a new story. And it may not always come with more wealth and gifts and riches and friends, right? It's not like we're trying to get to the Instagram
Darn.
picture. And it may not always include a cruise. Thankfully, last year's ours did, but it's just, yeah, just keeping perspective. So,
I don't have anything else to add. I mean, I could throw some more Taylor lyrics in there, but
give us a
I feel
really good
like,
one to go up, close out on.
oh, that's putting me on the spot. She's written over 200 songs.
Are you ready for it?
I
We drop the beat right there as our outro music starts.
will say that just as a side note, on New Year's Eve, because I was supposed to be at Disney and I was not, I was at your house instead, which not second, You weren't like just a runner up or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay. But you did let me play Are You Ready for It at, well, 10:59, because we are old people and I wanted to celebrate at 11 and not 12. But at 10:58:49, if you start ready for it, then as the clock strikes midnight, she is saying, "Are you ready for it?" And that's how we got into 2024.
That's how, okay, stop lumping me into these old person thing. I was never upset about the start time of the Taylor party, and I always stay up till after midnight on New Year's Eve. You're saying you're old now just because you're finally 40 and can put that label to why you go to bed early. You're
Listen,
like,
who starts parties at 9 o'clock? Like college kids do. That's who does. It was a
what?
bunch of 21-year-olds out
I
there on
was
the
gonna
dance floor.
say. The median age of the room was pretty young. We were definitely on the upper. I'm not saying there weren't other people our age there, but we were definitely not the majority.
Listen, I don't have a problem with that. I was young in my 20s when I started listening to Taylor, so I'm the right age for it. I'm a millennial just like she is.
There you go. You're a little bit older than her, but
Like, I am the same age from Taylor as you and I are from each other.
yeah, and you remind me how much older I am than you all the time. Listen, I feel like we had a really good note to go out on, and then we just stayed 2 minutes too long. Dear
All
listener,
right.
we hope that you enjoyed this.
And that wraps up another episode of the Dauntless Grace Exchange. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave a review so other people can find us.
You can follow us on social media to stay connected. We're on Instagram at Dauntless Grace Ministries, and our Facebook page is Dauntless Grace.
For more about the Enneagram, visit our website at dauntlessgrace.org for coaching and training opportunities. And you can follow me at Enneagram Megan on Instagram.
And be sure to check out our website for more information about today's podcast. Plus, you can click the resources tab to find books by all the authors we've spoken to or about. And you can find it at dauntlessgrace.org.